absorbed. You will spend the next 10 years of your life on your knees with your head in the toilet in this powder room, wiping the walls, baseboards, counter, and mirror. You will carefully pick vomit out of your hair and splash water on your face. You retch with such force at times your back is strained and you fear a slipped disc. You awaken with swollen lymph nodes and not much energy, as only lunch from the day prior is allowed to stay in your body. You routinely feel this way as you start your 4-mile daily run. Your husband tries to sabotage you by bringing home cake and holding it under your nose, literally. You seek help a few times, but eating disorders are extremely hard to treat, and your efforts are unsuccessful. One therapist saying, quote, "I don't really know what to do with you. Have you read this book?" You respond that you have read it and that it made you a better bulimic. Over time, the binging outpaces the purging, and your body begins to get larger. In 2005, you are having to buy new, larger clothes. It is happening again. You are filled with shame and terror. You have been in the marriage at least 5 years beyond loving him. It is fraught with conflict and mental illness. When you attempt to discuss separating, his reaction is extreme and involves threats of suicide and returning to active addiction. He has begun to gamble as a replacement for drinking and using. Given your joint finances, which reflect the mental illness that infiltrates your marriage from both sides, you are terrified he will decimate your credit and your future. Your friend, who also struggles with food, reads a book called Passing for Thin. The memoir details participation in a 12-step food program, the name of which is kept anonymous per Tradition 11. She deduces what it might be after some online research and finds a local meeting. She is scared to go. She has not been to a 12-step meeting before. You have been to thousands and offer to accompany her. You clearly state that since seeing a new psychiatrist and getting on a new medication that will hopefully be the magic bullet you have been seeking for the last 15 years, you are not interested in doing the program, but you will support her. You arrive at the church just prior to 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning. It is a sunny spring day. There are about 8 women present, including you and your friend. They start the meeting. The readings and structure are based on AA and are very comfortable and familiar to you. They then pivot to what is referred to as a first step meeting. This occurs when there are newcomers present and typically involves people sharing brief summaries of their story in order to orient you to the program and demonstrate the recovery that can be achieved. You can't really believe what you are seeing and hearing. These women are beautiful, intelligent, successful, and thin. They are talking about abstinence from food. You are an abstinence veteran. You know you can abstain. You have abstained from drugs and alcohol for 18 years at that point. You wished often there was a way to simply abstain from food. Then you could do it. This abstinence that they describe and the freedom that comes from it sounds like an utter miracle. They describe weighing and measuring 3 meals a day, choosing foods in specific amounts from the food list, nothing in between meals except coffee, tea, or diet soda. You have some experience with weighing from that Red Book diet. This weighing is not optional. It, as well as the approved food list, is the basis of the program. That and a daily commitment of your food to a qualified food sponsor. It's the last bit that gives you pause. You don't want to report to anyone. Even during your years of addiction recovery, you have resisted sponsorship. It is required in this program. You cannot be abstinent without it. You and your friends stay after the meeting and make your first food commitment to a lovely woman who stays after to help you get started and temporarily sponsor you. You stop at Red Robin on the way home and eat greasy, fatty fried food that will no longer be part of your new life. That night, alone while your husband works swing shift, you plan and execute your last binge. You write down everything you eat, how it tastes, and how it makes you feel. It is an exercise in self-abuse, shame, and ultimately, honesty. The next day, April 24th of 2005, you are abstinent. It takes less than 4 months for your marriage to end, this last vestige of shared dysfunction stripped away. On August 15th, you separate from your husband and start the year-long acrimonious trudge that is divorce. You understand why people kill their spouses instead of divorcing them. You hate him and tell him so. He is hanging on like a child being ripped from a parent because you have been taking care of everything for so long. Your codependence and enabling are incredibly sticky, like flypaper. A year later, you are finally, legally, freed. On September 10th of 2005, just 26 days after you have ended your 17-year marriage, you go on a date with a man you have sought out, having met him a year earlier on a rare night out with friends. Again, you cannot stand to be without a man. It is a drive as strong as all your other addictions combined, but somehow does not occur to you as that. You are clean, sober, 26 days separated, and barely 5 months abstinent in your food recovery program. The weight you carried in with you to that first meeting is mostly gone, around 35 pounds. It is a nearly 75-pound difference from your top weight. As in the past, the world begins to open back up to you, the sun shines a little brighter, and the comments of approval start to roll in. You are acceptable again, no longer a disappointment of a woman. You will weigh and measure your food 3 times a day for nearly 17 years. You will do it when you travel to other countries, when you are debilitated by cancer treatment, at family gatherings and special events. The core guidepost of this program is, quote, no matter what. There are no exceptions made for when it's just too hard. So you use your highly disciplined nature as well as your terror of falling back into bulimia to anchor your commitment. This program is termed, quote, the last house on the block. In recovery terms, it means nothing else has worked and this is your last stop. Those in the other less rigid food recovery programs term you and your compatriots, quote, food Nazis. The date you went on easily transitions into a relationship. Again, you are unable to be without an intimate partner. It is like oxygen. You will be with him for 14 years. He is accepting and supportive of your recovery. He runs back to your apartment to get your food scale, your forgotten fruit, orders things you can eat, waits for you to weigh in case you need more vegetables. He patiently goes from restaurant to restaurant as you travel the world together until you find one that will be able to provide the 1 to 1.5 pounds of vegetables required at each meal. He does not criticize your appearance, but rather focuses on it intently and delivers constant compliments about it. He also routinely expresses his disdain for the fat and the gluttonous. Given how you have been treated in the past, the compliments are welcome and reassuring. However, they sneakily have a similar effect. They reinforce the belief that your value is intrinsically tied to your appearance, and your appearance is intrinsically tied to your weight, and if it changes in the wrong direction, you will no longer be wanted. There is always a subtle feeling that he is looking for something or someone better, which keeps you from feeling accepted by him, so you try to be better. For 14 years, you try to be the perfect partner, so you will not be betrayed and discarded. It does not work. You are betrayed and discarded anyway. By the time the years-long betrayals are exposed, you can no longer smile from all the Botox and filler you have in your face. The years in this relationship, with its undercurrent of insecurity and subtle and not so subtle acts of exclusion, have driven you to hammer away at your outsides. It is a form of self-harm that distracts you from your inside pain. You just pay others to do it. The end of this relationship and the way you are treated by this person whom you loved plummets you into the darkest and lowest bottom of your life. You are still weighing and measuring your food. You are still diligently working your food recovery program and staying connected with the fellowship of others that share your malady. You think that this will be necessary for the remainder of your life. And then something else begins to happen. You are determined to climb out of this hole, this abyss of dehumanization by men, and to not tumble again into its depths. You have had enough. How fucking dare they? You take on your own healing as a second full-time job. As you begin to shift from self-hate to self-acceptance to self-love, you find yourself unable to eat these high-volume, regimented meals. You slide over to the anorexic end of the eating disorder spectrum. It does not seem to be about control, however. It feels like your spirit and your body are rejecting this regimen that had once saved your life. It no longer seems to suit you, and instead of feeling loving, it feels punishing. You speak to a sage old friend who recounts a similar bout of anorexia in her youth that landed her in an institution. She simply says, quote, "I think I just could not swallow any more shit." This resonates. You are done swallowing shit. You don't know what it means to be done, but you know that you are. It is scary to break from this program that has been an anchor in your life. The first time you eat unweighed food, you do so with your brother, your first best friend and soulmate. You have eaten 3 weighed and measured meals a day with nothing in between for nearly 17 years. As you tread into this new relationship with food, you are cautious and seek refuge in your family. They have supported and accommodated this food program in every restaurant and every family holiday. Now they are quietly supportive and accepting of you, as they always have been. You abstain from sugar, grain, and certain other foods. These things do not agree with your gut and activate craving. You know they are not for you. You continue to eat foods from the food list and eventually allow in some fruits, vegetables, and nuts which were not on the food list. You travel domestically and internationally and experience the joy of being able to order something off the menu without all the special requests and extra sides of vegetables required to meet the 2.5 pound per day vegetable requirement of your former program. You eventually allow yourself a snack in between meals. You no longer require yourself to eat 3 meals a day if your body doesn't seem to want it. Your body, already small, becomes smaller, first from not eating much and then from only eating what it seems to want and require. You always had a naturally small frame, even with your 70 plus inches of height. Your body is allowed to be what it is naturally. It is not being force-fed nor starved. It just is. You eat until you are not hungry. You bump up against a subtle feeling that signals you are satiated but not yet full, and stop eating, no longer interested in the food. This feels like love. It is new. It is a revelation. You no longer weigh your body. It is allowed to just be what it is without being subject to a metric. You travel to Belize alone and delight in the delicious food and the lack of struggle. You spend a month in Malta and enjoy the wonderful fruits and nuts sourced from Turkey and Greece and Italy. Whilst in Malta, you meet a man. It has been more than 2 years that you have abstained from sex and romantic entanglements with men. It is your first such abstinence in 36 years. It is an epiphany and an opportunity to heal and experience a rebirth of body, mind, and spirit. As you walk down the street in Valletta, having just feasted on a plate of lamb chops and vegetables, you are open-hearted, completely natural, and free of pretense and self-consciousness. He is the same. He strikes up a chat, asks for your number. You give it. He messages immediately. You go on a date, and then another, and another. He delights in your food and its healthy discipline. You explain what you used to do, but he is Turkish, and only a certain amount of your extensive English language lands. You realize it doesn't matter. Now is now. Life is now. You are intimate, and it is wonderful and natural and unselfconscious. Eventually, he comments on the kilos that he perceives to be extra on his own body. You tell him he looks good and feels good and that you love and accept your body and his without judgment. There will be no body shaming. It has no place here. Oh yes, this is how you fucking dare. You dare to accept yourself and your body unconditionally and reject all judgment. You could not have known that your food and your relationships with men were inextricably tied. You could not have known that the core wound that needed to be healed was the lack of acceptance you felt from your father that you then chased after in all the men that followed. You could not have known that you were choosing men that would never give you this approval, no matter how hard you tried to secure it. You could not have known until you knew. It took being empty, scarily empty, dark and unrecognizable inside. It took being done. This morning, you arise and come out from the bedroom and plop down in your favorite chair. Before your funny, honest, picky, intense, playful, unselfconscious partner leaves for work at one of the hotels here in Malta, he asks you why you haven't eaten breakfast yet. Your favorite Turkish figs and Lavazza coffee. You simply respond that you are waiting until your body feels hungry.